Welcome to the Reading for Success podcast, brought to you by the Success League. This podcast focuses on customer success and leadership books, provides an overview of each, and gives you an honest assessment of whether or not it's worth your time. Welcome to the podcast. Hi, my name is Kristen Hayer, and I'm the host of Reading for Success. I'm also the CEO of the Success League, a boutique customer success consulting and training firm based in San Francisco. Today, I'm very excited to introduce my new co-host, Russell Bourne, who will be joining me on these podcasts going forward. I am excited to have someone to talk about books with, and who better than Russell, who's an experienced CS leader and a fellow book lover. Russell, thanks for joining me on this and future podcasts.
Kristen, it's great to be here, and we're going to have a lot of fun with this.
We are. So, Russell, can you introduce yourself to the audience and talk about how you landed in customer success? And what you're doing for the Success League right now, and what you do in your free time.
Of course. I'm a longtime practitioner of customer success, from contributing to leading to coaching and now consulting. My entry into the field was with a small division of Seagate, which was one of the very first cloud-based SaaS data protection offerings. I was young, and it started as a basic customer-facing rep role, but it was immediately obvious we could give our customers much better than that. Customer success was just becoming a thing, and so it's been off to the races ever since. So now, with the Success League, I instruct our public leadership certification course, I engage in one-on-one coaching for leaders, and in deeper consulting engagements with companies. And as for free time, I'm a gigging guitar player once that fully starts again, and I am obsessed with pitching a baseball.
Very cool. We're really excited to have you on our team at this point, and I'm excited to have you on this podcast. So this week, we're reviewing our October book, which is called Now Discover Your Strengths, and it's by Don Clifton and Marcus Buckingham. This is an oldie but a goodie. It was first published in 2001, so it's the 20th anniversary of this book. I mean, honestly, I think it's probably considered retro. I don't know, or vintage maybe at this point, but there's a newer version of the book called StrengthsFinder 2.0, and I feel like that book is missing some of the core value that this first book delivers, so I think this one holds up. Basically, Now Discover Your Strengths really introduced the StrengthsFinder profile, along with the premise that it's better to capitalize on your strengths than to spend time trying to fix your weaknesses. Starting on page 5, that section called The Revolution, the authors talk about why and how this is true. The original Gallup organization survey that kicked off this book looked at 2 million people and their strengths. And those strengths were organized then into 34 themes, which are outlined in the book. And now we know this survey is the StrengthsFinder assessment. And I think on the website, I saw that they've had about 36 million people go through the StrengthsFinder assessment at this point. So it's pretty, it's got a lot of data now behind it.
That's quite the sample.
It is a big sample. So on this episode, you and I are going to talk about what we liked and disliked about the book, but also about our own strengths and how we see those playing out in real life and what strengths we see as being important to customer success. Russell, to kick things off, do you agree with the premise that it's better to leverage your strengths than to work to improve your weaknesses?
I do. They got it right. And I think that for two main reasons. Number one, working with your strengths gives you energy and it leaves you happier and more fulfilled. And two, if you build on your natural talents, you can get farther than you can building on anything else.
Yeah, I liked what they had to say in the book about talents. I think we're going to talk about that in a minute. You know, I feel like it is counterintuitive still. You know, even 20 years after this book came out and the StrengthsFinder assessment's been out in the market for a long time, it is sort of counterintuitive to think, oh, I'm not going to worry about my weaknesses. I'm just going to focus on my strengths. And I keep catching myself, even though I've read this book tons of times and I've led workshops with teams on StrengthsFinder, I catch myself still trying to fix my weaknesses. So that's my only, I guess, thought on this is, you know, how do we sort of get to that ideal state where we are really leveraging our strengths and not just focusing on our weaknesses? Because it's kind of natural to do that.
It is. And it's something that we're taught from a really young age.
Yeah.
To do that as well. And in the book, it does say that there's value in that in terms of damage control. But in terms of maximizing yourself, it's really all about the strengths.
So the authors spend a lot of time describing the link between talents and strengths. And they argue that strengths stem from talents And they spend a decent portion of the book really describing the brain science behind the development of talent. When you boil it all down, they say that talents are the mental connections that stick out of the billions that don't, and that these are formed in your first 16-ish years of your life. And after that, mental plasticity starts to shut down and you're stuck with the talents that you developed at the beginning of your life. What thoughts do you have on that?
Well, that's a really scary thought, but it certainly explains why my toddler is overstimulated so easily, but also so creative, like all toddlers are. If I had to pull one weakness out of the book, neurological science has come a long way since the first edition.
Yeah.
And I think there's actually more value in exploring how connections are made throughout your entire life. But while working with your strengths should be your main focus, it's obviously also healthy for your brain to experience new puzzles. But you have someone who's older than two, so I'd love to hear what you think about that.
Yeah, so I have a 16-year-old, and so she's right at that place where theoretically those things that are not talents are shutting down in her brain. I don't really see that. I think I have a kid who's very creative, though. I am curious about how level of creativity maybe impacts neuroplasticity. I think that they have done a lot of brain studies since this book was first put out. And I think that that topic of neuroplasticity has been explored a lot deeper. And I think that, I mean, I keep seeing things like apps and tools and approaches for improving neuroplasticity in adults. So I have to think that there's ways that you can kind of get around this. It is interesting to think about that in light of talents, though. I guess as I was reading this again, I kept coming back to the idea that Malcolm Gladwell brought up in one of his books that it takes 10,000 hours to really develop mastery at something. You know, if you think about it that way, those things that at 16 sort of surfaced as your talents, you know, when you're an adult, you've had, what, another 16, 20, 30 years of time to put into those talents. So it's kind of solidified them. So, I mean, that kind of argues for what the book is saying, that these are the things that you kind of are stuck with as your best features, whatever those may be. It was an interesting part of the book. I want to get into our strengths, but before we do that, what else resonated with you about the first section of the book?
Just the sheer number of people who don't feel their strengths are used at work. I think it's on about page 2. But according to the book, only 20% do, and that means that 80% of people spend time doing things they don't feel good at. And that's a really grinding thing to do. I think we've probably all been there.
Yeah.
And it's unhealthy for people, and it's not helping companies get ahead.
Yeah. It's hard to do stuff that you're not good at. I mean, I'll say, you know, just the nature of what I do as the CEO of our company, to do accounting stuff. Accounting stuff is probably the least favorite thing that I do on a regular basis. And thankfully, I have an accounting team that helps with that. But just any piece of that, really, I'm not good at it. I don't like it. And it does, it grates on me. And it's I've isolated it to one day a week so that it doesn't eat at my soul. But it's hard. And I hate to think of people that are, you know, really doing that for much more of their working life. Yeah.
Right. I mean, imagine doing it 5 days a week with someone over your shoulder pointing out every mistake.
Oh, it's so painful. All right, let's get to the actual strengths part of the book. So it's worth noting that when you buy this book, it comes with a sealed envelope inside, and that lets you take the StrengthsFinder assessment for free as a part of your purchase of the book. If you want to do the StrengthsFinder without buying the book, you can do that. You visit their website. It's gallup.com/CliftonStrengths, and you pay $20 and you can take the assessment. Honestly, the book's a better deal, so I would just buy the book. I've used StrengthsFinder over the past 15 years with my teams, and I found it interesting to look at the strengths that consistently surface across customer success teams and CS professionals. And I've also found it interesting to consider why certain strengths have never shown up on my CS teams. So let's start by talking about our strengths. What are your top 5 strengths? This is what the assessment gives you, is your top 5 strengths.
Right, right. So in order of strength of my strengths, I have belief, connectedness, learner, relator, and empathy.
Okay.
What about you?
We have a little overlap. I have the learner strength. I'll talk more about that in a minute because that one is super common in CS professionals. My other strengths are futuristic. This is a strength that lets you look into the future and envision, you know, what could be. Activator, that's the strength that makes you want to make the action happen now. Achiever, this one gives you drive. One of the things they say in the book is every day starts at zero and you need achievements to feel good about your day. Definitely true for me. And then self-assurance. So this is the strength of confidence that you know that you can deliver results. So those are mine. What of your strengths really resonated with you? And how do you see them showing up in your daily life and work?
I have to go with the top two, belief and connectedness, because they weave with each other so closely. So the first two values in the book, when you read about belief that they name, are family-oriented and altruistic. And that's definitely me. So I'm highly motivated by the premise that we all work ultimately for some reason that's at home. And all it takes is for one person to help another person toward that. And it becomes contagious. And then you have a real community from the way that all these actions connect.
Yeah.
And so if I think about my daily life as well as work, those are really kind of my North Stars that I go toward. And I feel professionally it really helps me because it helps you establish trust sooner and people will open up to you. And then you can help them with what's really going on.
I want to come back around to belief in a minute.
Okay.
Mine, I think I truly embrace my futuristic strength. That one, I love that strength. And it's my top one. It lets me see coming trends. I can predict what's going to happen in different scenarios really easily. You know, I think these are all good things. The downside is that I tend to forget the past really easily. I have people bring up things that they did with me, you know, 10 years ago that I just don't remember because I don't focus on what happened in the past. And I think that can be a little off-putting to people who really like the past and like to reminisce. So that's the downside of being a futurist. I think for me, my other two strengths that I think are interesting are the achiever and the self-assurance strength. I think they fight with each other and I feel the fight in me. The achiever in me is always striving for perfection. And then there's the self-assurance part of me that just wants to let everything go and move on and be confident. And I find that I have to chew on my failures for a while because that's that achiever in me. But then once I let them go, they're gone, just like the past. So, I mean, I think that can be good and bad. The past and your failures are how you learn. So I think you do have to chew on those a little bit and make sure that you try not to repeat them. But I see those two strengths kind of working together for me. I want to talk about team strengths, and in particular, CS team strengths. I've been measuring my CS team strengths for about 15 years over three different companies, and I think there's a few trends that I've noticed. The biggest trend is that the learner strength shows up in almost every awesome CSM who has ever worked on one of my teams. You have the learner strength, Russell. I have it. I think other people on our team have it. What do you think it is about that strength that makes it show up in a great CS professional?
Well, I think there's a couple things at play. You know, for starters, customer success as a field is 15 or maybe 20 years old, and we are still figuring it out, as you all know. And so I think it's a domain that's constantly going to be iterating, and that is great for learners because there's always something new. And on top of that, every customer is different. And every customer is going to reveal a different technology and a different set of personalities and different power struggles in those companies. And that's something that just puts you in the position of never-ending learning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you on all of that. There is one strength that I've never seen before on any of my CS teams until now, and it's the first one that you mentioned, the belief strength. And I've always wondered why that never showed up on my teams before. My hypothesis was that belief is about core values and that core values differ from customer to customer. So it might be tough for a CSM to relate to different kinds of people if they had the belief strength because, you know, it might be a little more black and white. However, you blew up my hypothesis because you're a very good CS professional. And there it is. It's your top one, right?
Right. I mean, okay. So it's funny to hear that because I actually struggle because of how much gray I see.
Okay.
And I thought about this ever since I took this last assessment. And I think in my case, belief is more of an attitude than an application.
Yeah.
So meaning I really value and appreciate others who want to accomplish things honestly and with consideration for how that's going to impact others, mm-hmm. things like that. And I guess you could think of those as core beliefs, but I think of them as something even before core beliefs. And there's not one path to the rest of it, right? So every company is going to have different circumstances and different answers. Mm-hmm. And I'm totally open to finding all of those. I think that solving those mysteries and giving people their aha moments is the fun part of this.
So Russell, other strengths that I've found are common in CS teams are achiever, arranger, connectedness, empathy. That's kind of an obvious one. Positivity, relator, responsibility, and woo. It's W-O-O. It stands for winning others over. I keep seeing these strengths surface over and over amongst the top performers on my teams. I think my favorite part of this book and why I much prefer it to the StrengthsFinder 2.0 book, for managers anyway, is chapter 6, and it's called Managing Strengths. If you want a cheat sheet on how to effectively manage your team, that is the chapter for you. If you know the strengths of your team, you can go to that chapter and you can look up how to manage somebody with that strength. And it's presented in easy to understand bullet points. And not that, you know, it's perfect. There's a little horoscopiness to it. But I think it's a good direction for you to go in so that you can really start to consider how the different people on your team need to be managed a little differently. So, for example, Russell and I are both learners. The tips on managing us include positioning us in roles that require staying current in our fast-changing field. So check. We need to track our progress by identifying milestones or levels that we've reached, and we need to celebrate those milestones. And we should work beside a master who will continually require us to learn more, which really we are so lucky because we have so many amazing leaders in our field that we get to connect with regularly. So that is also a check. That's a part of the book that I really like. What part of the book's your favorite?
I have to say the same thing. The Managing Strengths chapter, it's just so practical and applicable, and it gives you ideas in real life on how to lead someone of each strength. It is a lot to take in, and the learner in me is okay with that.
Yeah.
But I can see myself referring to that section for a long time as I come across new people and their strength profiles.
Yeah. I really love that part of the book. It makes it worth buying this 20-year-old book versus just buying the StrengthsFinder 2.0 little book, which doesn't have that section in it. It just has your strengths. So, okay, the bottom line of this podcast is this worth reading? So I picked this book because I've used it lots of times over the years. And as I mentioned, I like it better than the StrengthsFinder 2.0 book. I think CSMs might want to go for the StrengthsFinder 2.0 book, however, because it is very specific to your own strengths rather than being focused on a team. But I think leaders would really benefit from this book and the original vision. I think that all but the most senior leaders could probably skip the chapter on building a strengths-based organization. It's kind of at the end of the book because that's a little out of scope for most CS leaders. But, you know, if that's part of what you do as maybe a chief customer officer, it's worth a read. So I like this book. Russell, what's your recommendation? Worth reading?
I think it is worth reading. I think it's a foundational book, even if it seems a little bit dated in some spots. And I think it's an excellent reference book because of that Managing Strengths chapter.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so let's talk about our November book. So we'll be reviewing a new book called Digital Customer Service by Rick DeLisi and Dan McKelly. I am so excited about this one. This is a book by the authors of The Effortless Experience, which you all know I really like that one too. I just reviewed that one a few months ago. And it's a topic that's very relevant for today's customer success teams. I am sincerely hoping that we find lots of insights that are relevant to creating a digital customer success program. And I can't wait to interview Rick DeLisi for a second time about this new book of his. Please tune in on November 4th for our next episode of Reading for Success. And we also may sneak in a bonus episode in the meantime, if you're all really good. Hey, if you like this episode and you're a regular listener, please help us get the word out by taking a couple of minutes to subscribe, share Reading for Success with other customer success professionals, and rate the podcast. And Russell, I will see you on the next podcast.
These are fun. I can't wait.
Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join Reading for Success next time.